Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Jonah and Ben Play Board Games with Friends. I am Jonah, joined, as always, by my co-host, Ben.
Hello, hello.
And today we are joined all the way from Hadera, Israel?
Israel, Dima. Yeah.
Welcome to the show, Dima.
Shalom, everybody. Shalom.
So how are things over there in the late evening, right?
Well, yeah, it's pretty late right now. It's also quarantine right now here in Israel. We've been in quarantine for the last 2 weeks, and they extended it for 10 days more. So we're at home, mostly. But I'll get tomorrow early wake up as my kids will start jumping on me saying, Daddy, wake up, let's play.
Are they doing online schooling or what are they doing?
So normally they do online schooling, but my kids are too small. So my older kid is 4.5 years old, Ilan, and my younger one, Adam, is almost 2 years old. So he's like going to our kindergarten. My wife owns a kindergarten. So he goes to that kindergarten, and my older kid just like he does nothing basically. We play board games at home. We watch TV. He likes to come and say, Dad, let's play while I'm studying or working or trying to do whatever necessary. The flow of the quarantine.
Right. Yep. I get that. And Ben, what have you been up to lately?
To be honest, now that hockey's back on, I've been watching a lot of hockey. The Rangers are not great, but they're up and down, so it is what it is. I actually played a couple of games this week, which we'll get to, obviously. Other than that, I don't know. I've just been hanging out. I've been looking for jobs. Nothing's really come up too much lately, but, you know, still looking. And that's really it. I don't know. Just kind of hanging out. Doing my thing. Gonna go disc golfing tomorrow, though, hopefully, so that'll be fun.
It's so cold.
Yeah, it's fine. I really want to go, and it's been nice-ish, but I haven't gone out, so hopefully I'll get out tomorrow and play around.
Dima, do you know what disc golfing is?
I have no idea.
So if you know what normal golf is, I assume you know what normal golf is, right?
Yeah.
So
instead Never played of, it, though, but I do know.
Yeah, normal golf is too difficult. Normal golf is hitting a ball into a hole, and disc golf is throwing a frisbee into a basket. And then it's the same sport.
Oh, right, that sounds much more fun.
It's a lot of fun. Jonah introduced me to that like a year and a half ago, and I am obsessed. It's great. You could actually see, I mean, the listeners can't see, but these are discs. I'm trying to sell discs, and I have a bunch just laying on my bed behind me that I'm trying to catalog and list online. So I have way too many because, as we know, I hoard things and collect them, and I have way too many discs. We were cleaning. My mom was here, what was it now, like a week and a half ago, and we opened up my closet to start like going through things to clean it out, and she was like, she just like opened the door and was like, are you kidding me? And she's like, how many discs are here? How many discs would you say are here? And I'm like, I don't want to answer that.
You divide it by 10 and give them that answer, right?
Yes. That's what I did.
So, well,
yep, that's what I've been up to.
Speaking of big collections, Dima, we can see a nice collection of games behind you.
Yeah, so I have today, according to BGG, I'm not really refreshing it a lot, so I don't really add more stuff, but about 300 games. Not including expansions, but it got much bigger since I started working with board games. So I own a YouTube channel, and most of Israel's publishers has been sending me a lot of board games for reviews and instructional videos.
Cool.
So yeah, it got much, 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 much bigger. And I'm also waiting on tons of Kickstarters to come on.
Aren't we all?
My man.
So before we talk about the games that we've played, Dima, since it's your first time on the show, why don't you tell us what game got you into the hobby or what games got you into the hobby and what type of games you like to play, if you can distill those 300 games into a rough genre.
Wow. So basically, as everybody, I played as a kid, Talisman and Monopoly and all of the classical board games. And then they kind of vanished. Okay, I know that there has been games going on, but like for me, it kind of vanished. We went to video games, and then high school, and then Israeli Army, and university, and everything went as it went. And then about, I think about 7 or 8 years ago, my friend said to me, "Listen, you need to try this game." Guess what game it was? Catan.
Of
Okay,
course.
Catan.
That was what I was
Yeah,
going to
yeah,
guess.
yeah. So he invited me to play Catan with him and his family. He lived in the settlements in Israel. So it's like you go through a mountain road to the middle of nowhere, then you get to this caravan and you sit there. It was kind of back then he used to live in a remote settler settlement.
You played Settlers in the Settlements.
So we sat there and we played for the first time Catan, and I said, "Wow, this is cool." I enjoyed it a lot, and I had a lot of fun with it. But I didn't think about buying anything at that point. I just played it. Then I came back home. I moved to live with a good friend of mine, and one day we were really bored at home, so we decided to go for just a walk. And in the middle of our walk, we came to this bookstore, and they just started selling board games inside of the bookstore. And suddenly, I see on the shelf Talisman. Right, the Talisman, I remember it as a kid, amazing. And Game of Thrones back then was very big, so there was also Game of Thrones. Now, Game of Thrones is not a gateway game, it's not a
Right.
game to start with. So I took it, I came back home, I was super excited. I'm gonna play Game of Thrones. I opened it up, I saw the booklet of rules, which was very thick, and I just closed it in, went. Brought it back to the store, said, "I don't want that." And got Munchkin.
Wow. That's a
Yeah,
very
I'm
different
not,
direction.
yeah, definitely very different. I'm not super proud of it, but we played it, we enjoyed it. Munchkin kind of became a regular thing every evening as friends came by. So we were playing all the time, we were very enjoying it. Also, Talisman. Then we decided to purchase finally Catan, so we started playing that. And then when I went and met my girlfriend that became my wife, so I remember she said to me, "There's one disadvantage I need to tell you about that I have." And I'm like, "What?" She said, "Well, I love board games." And I told her, "Well, I love board games also." So we clicked straight away, and she kind of got me into the hobby fully.
Oh,
Because
wow.
with her, I found out about Dixit and later on Cult Express. And later on, one of our favorites game till today is Potion Explosion, for example. We enjoyed it a lot. Ticket to Ride, we have a bunch of them at home. I also got into adventure games. So I really like campaign games and adventure games, not Gloomhaven. I don't know why everything is the same. Every mission you do the same thing. You just need to kill everybody, and that's about it.
You and me both. I am not a. I got the Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion.
It's much better.
Yeah, I figured that's a better place to start. But when I played full Gloomhaven, I couldn't get into it. So I feel you on that. So, yeah.
I started with Gloomhaven, and it was just okay. You need to kill everybody, then you go again, and you need again to kill everybody, and you need again and again and again. But one of my favorite games of campaigns is actually Tainted Grail. Tainted Grail is amazing, really amazing. I guess today's on my top list as my favorite game to play. I also love Seventh Continent.
Definitely a campaign gamer.
No, I enjoy campaigns because I feel those board games tell me a story. But I also like casuals, like Legendary ranks pretty high for me. Legendary Marvel deck building game. Me and my wife, we played Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle together, so we kind of we finished it up. I played bunch of kids games, which are very, very good. You have a lot of very good kids games. All of the juniors, right? So it's like Stone Age Junior, and then you have Ticket to Ride Junior and Carcassonne Junior
Right.
and Catan Junior. We just played Catan like 2 hours ago with my son before he went to sleep. So Captain Junior, Dragon's Cave is a big hit for him. He loves it a lot. We play it a lot. So kind of all of my life in the last couple of years has been around games and my other hobby, which is traveling and guiding.
Which is nobody's hobby right now, unfortunately.
Yep, I've been unemployed for the last almost a year already. Almost a year. My last group was on February, and we're almost at February, so yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we talk about the fun hobby, which is, of course, the board games. What have you played in the last week or two or month or whatever you want to say?
So because I work now with board games, you kind of got to the moment when you have games you have to play either than games that you want to play. I could say there's a big difference over there, and it kind of it's kind of hard. I try a lot of new games right now because I got a big shipment of commercial videos that I need to do. So I tried like games, Treasure Island by Reiner Kainizia, which is basically Yahtzee in a different theme. We played Mau Mau, which is Uno, just in a different theme. It just has symbols, that doesn't have numbers, which goes very, very good for my kid. He enjoys it. He loves it. I tried Architects of the West Kingdom finally.
What'd you think?
Finally tried it. I think it's very good as a solo game. I think also it would be a very good game as a more like, you know, with other participants, but because it's a quarantine right now, it's a bit problematic to play with other people right now as we speak of. But Architects, I think it's very interesting because you have a lot of options over there. Like you have a lot of ways to win. And whenever you have a lot of like options, I love the game because no game looks the same.
Right.
Right. Every time you play it is different. And also it's like, it's by Sean Phillips and most of his games are great, including Raiders of the North Sea, which is probably one of my first games I ever played after, you know, after the
Twice
Gateway
in a
games.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I played it a lot.
I love Raiders.
Raiders is amazing. I even joined a tournament of Raiders during a Renegade Con that was online at the start of COVID situation. Didn't win. I got, I think, like sixth place or seventh place. I don't know. It was
cool.
Between, yeah. I went like one step up, and then before the final, I lost. Yeah, but so I played that. What other games I tried in the last in the last week? Let's say, no, I think Architects was the big one that I sat down to learn.
I do have a question, because you said now that you're like reviewing games that come in and stuff, and you did mention that whole thing about like sometimes you have to play a game versus a game that you want to play. Do you find that can negatively impact your opinion of a game if you're like, oh man, I have to get this video done, but I'd rather play this game right now? But then you go in to make that video. Do you find that can sometimes skew your opinion? Like, oh, I wish I was playing something else type of deal?
No, I would definitely say no. First of all, I try to be professional about it. But more than that, I love to get to know new games. That's one of the reasons I have a lot of different games. I love to find out about new games. I like to see how designers manage to work those mechanics inside of this game and use it with this theme or a different theme inside of the game, whether you feel the theme or you don't feel the theme. I'd love to find out more about the game. I still have a dream about me designing a board game. So I try to find out and see and try as much more games as possible in order to, you know a lot so I can kind of bring it into a future board game that I will make. Nobody knows though.
Are these games that you're getting coming in Hebrew or in English? Or both?
90% in Hebrew, some in English. Because mostly, it's Israeli publishers that want the publicity in Hebrew. I review in Hebrew. I have a board game YouTube channel about in Hebrew because I try to promote the hobby inside of Israel. I think that there's enough of YouTube channels in English. And yeah, there's like they counted them. I saw some statistics like about 140.
I'm sure there are even more than that
140
for
different,
podcasts.
probably English, YouTube channels about board games. In Hebrew, we have, well, basically, we have like five. Out of them, the active ones are about three, and it changes. Like, I take the more like casual games, but different kind of games. We have another channel that goes mainly into family games or kids games, and another channel that basically just tries to sell its games. So this is why he does that. Yeah.
Cool. Ben, why don't you tell us what you've been playing lately?
Sure. I did play our game of the week, which we'll get to in a little bit, so I will leave that to our later discussion. But I did finally get the chance to play Tidal Blades. I played at three players, which to me, from what I've heard, I would consider the minimum player count because if you play at two players, they introduce an AI character that just goes and blocks spaces on the board. So I would consider three players probably the minimum I would want to play at. And then I actually ended up selling it the day after.
So
Which
you
is
loved
good.
it.
I mean, okay, so that's the thing. First off, I'm happy that I sold it because it's working toward my 2021 goal of selling some games. It also gave me a lot of space because the box is obnoxiously large. I didn't dislike it. I just liked a lot of my other worker placement games better. And underneath all of the bling that they put into this game, it's one of the most simple worker placement games I've ever played. It's literally, there's nothing more to it from my experience playing it. There was nothing more to it than go to this spot, get your reward, or go to this spot and roll some dice to fight a monster. And to me, it just felt a little too overproduced for what it ended up being. Like, I would much rather play Raiders of the North Sea. Like, or if I'm going to go heavier, I'd rather play Anachrony or Tricarion or something if I want something with that like production quality. And I think for me, what I felt was the same as what another player felt, which was at least in the beginning, you start the way the game works is you start with two actions on your first turn, and then in the third round, you gain another action.
So like Everdell.
Yeah, so in the first round you start with two. In the second round you gain one, so then you have three, and in the third round you gain one, so you have four actions. The problem is the monsters that come up in this game, if you don't attack them, you roll a die at the end of the round, and if you roll a specific number, which denotes like the spot where the monster can be, there are two options. If you roll a d8, and if you roll a 1 through 5, one of the two monsters that could be out at any one time will attack. And if you didn't hurt that monster, you get a negative effect. If you roll a 6 through 8, the other monster, which is like the furthest away from moving off the board because it moves down, will be the one that attacks. And the same thing. But the problem is with two actions, if you don't go fight the monster, you're very likely to get injured or some sort of negative effect, which could be losing a die, which is very important during the course of the game. So you almost feel like you're hamstrung a little bit and you really only have one action because the other one almost feels necessary to be attacking the monster. At least that's what we noticed. And even then, if you don't cooperatively go and attack the monster, it will most likely live through both of its movement phases, and it will leave the board, at which point it affects everybody and it hurts everybody. So it almost like leans too heavily on forcing you to attack the monster. So in the first turn, you really only have like one action, and then you have to go and attack the monster as the other action if you don't want to get a negative effect right off the bat. It just felt a little like they added like too many things to keep track of for such a simple underlying core game. But that was, it's beautiful. I love that stuff. But it felt like they overdid it a little bit for me. And when I have so many other games and so many other worker placement games, since that's one of my favorite mechanics, I just didn't feel like I needed to keep it. So that was my mini review of Tidal Blades. But it's not a bad game, and I wouldn't say don't buy it. It's just not for me. So yeah, that's really all I played this week though.
Dima,
Outside of
have
the other game.
you seen Tidal Blades and its big rectangular
I
box?
heard about it. We have basically one retailer in Israel that brings games. He's a good friend of mine, and one of his workers, which is also a good friend of mine, he ordered Tidal Blades. He was talking about it, and all the we have like a two Facebook groups about board games in Israel, so everything was buzzing about it. It looks nice. The Kickstarter didn't really got me in when it was running. It looks nice, and now after what Ben said, really, I'm not really interested to try. I have so many like worker placement games, and so many good worker placement games. Even if it's Raiders, Everdell, and mostly casual. Like don't do like Anachrony or Tricarion, which is more complicated. I mostly do more casual or medium weight games. But I think that's like 100% enough for me at least.
Yeah, I would say, having played Everdell, I would say Everdell would be something that I would rather play than Tidal Blades if I was looking for a very beautiful looking game. And to me, it says something when one of the players during the game is like, "Yeah, I don't really like this." Like if someone's in the middle of a game and says, "Yeah, I don't really like this for like this reason," to me it's like, okay, then you look at that and you kind of see what they're talking about. Though I will say, and I texted Jonah after this because that player ended up winning the game, that one of my biggest board game pet peeves is when somebody mid-game is like, "Yeah, I don't like this game. I don't like this game," and then they end up winning. It's not like I think that someone who wins the game has to like the game. It's just really frustrating when they don't like it, but they still win. And I got destroyed, by the way, so as usual. So the scores were 29, 27, and then I had 13. So like I got smashed,
Wow.
which always happens. But like the person who got 29 points is like, "Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like it." And I'm like, "Oh God, okay."
I don't want to say that I'm someone that wins a lot of games because I'm not that person, but just from the other side of things, because I have had this experience like once or twice, because anyway, I have tried new games and won them and also not liked them, and it is a little frustrating as well to win and not enjoy the game, because you're like, "Oh, I was just kind of messing around and I fell into a victory. Like, what is there in this game that there is for me to see? I don't
And as someone who barely wins, I can't really relate,
know."
but I can imagine.
Yeah, me too. Definitely.
All right, I played a sneaky game of Clans last night on Board Game Arena because Nick sent a message in the Discord server saying, "Is anyone free for a game on Sunday?" And I was like, "No, but I'm free now." So Jake, being an Australian and always free in our evening time, was also free. So we just went on Board Game Arena, played a three-player game of Clans. It took, I think, 1 hour, maybe a little less than 1 hour. So Board Game Arena is really great for that, especially if it's a game that has some moving of resources and money and placing pieces. Like when there's a lot of that, and everyone knows how to play it, Board Game Arena can really quicken things up. So that was really nice. Also, it's cool to see the advanced stats on Board Game Arena. And one of those advanced stats is how many actions people took during the game. So I thought it was really neat to see that Nick took 49 actions during the game, and then I took 36 actions during the game, and Jake took 35 actions during the game. So any guesses on who won?
Jake.
No. Nick with his
Nick.
49 actions.
Oh. Actually, Board Game Arena, in the last couple of weeks, I have been using it a lot because I started teaching English as a private teacher here in Israel. And one of the ways to teach English is actually make people talk in English because, when teaching, a lot of times you teach people grammar and then they kind of got stuck with the talking because they're not practiced well enough. So when we play, we practice English, and this is how it kind of works, and it works amazing with Board Game Arena. I tried it also on TTS, it didn't really work. On Board Game Arena, it works amazing, mostly because I'm the host and they need to tell me what to do, and I don't understand Hebrew for them, at least.
What is your game of choice for doing this?
So we started with Carcassonne, was a little bit complicated at first, but then they kind of like moved it in. King Domino works amazingly. Potion Explosion or Seven Wonders Duel also works amazingly. All of them. I really want to try. There's a new game called Track the World or Tracking the World.
Right.
It used to have like a big Kickstarter, but today it's kind of like the only way to travel the world, even if it's only in Board Game Arena. But it's very cool because you get to like find out about places, and it incorporates a lot of English into them. So when I have a student that really doesn't work, want to talk English, I give him a lot to read, and that moment he's like, I'm struggling, but he gets to something. You see that it actually works.
Cool.
Sounds like my grandma at Passover Seder trying to get me to read parts of
Well,
it. Not gonna lie.
but you don't pay your grandma in the end, right?
True, I don't. She ends up actually paying me. She usually gives me money.
Okay.
But that's just 'cause she's so nice. But yeah,
Yeah.
no. It just
No,
sounds
but
similar. It's funny.
yeah. Well, they kind of call me to teach them English, so
Right.
yeah, with that.
I mean, it definitely sounds like a fun way to teach English versus just like sitting down and being like, go through your alphabet, learn this word, try and figure it out. It sounds more fun the way you do it, so.
Well, at the end, when you learn a language, you need to kind of get immersed into the language, right? So one of my homeworks is like read your favorite book or watch your favorite TV show in English, no subtitles. Or if you want to watch it with subtitles, then watch it twice, once with subtitles and then without subtitles. Because I believe that at the end, if you just make somebody to sit down and like write grammar and stuff, like, he wouldn't learn anything. At the end, he will learn only if he loves this language and he will use this language with things that he likes or she likes, of course. And this is why I think games are amazing for that, because everybody enjoys games. And there's much more, in recent years, there's been a lot of different games coming up and a lot of different new cool ways of how to win and how to play. And kids, mainly like 8 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old, enjoy them so much. So I think that's kind of an opportunity to also promote board games in the world and also teach them English with it.
Cool. I have some more questions about that, but I'm going to hold them until a little bit later. So for now, why don't you tell everyone what you chose for the game of the week and what that game is about?
Right. So the game of the week this week is Everdell. Which is a game that I think it's the most beautiful game that I saw. And once I was playing it with my friends, and one of them said, this game looks as if you can just take every picture, every painting in the game, put it inside of how you call
Frame.
like a frame, a picture frame, and then put it on the wall. And I think Everdell is like that. Basically, Everdell is a working placement game where you build your own city in the forest, right? And as the game progresses, you put your critters that you can play. You can play like turtles or hedgehogs or squirrels or mouses, and then you put them inside of different places. You get resources, and with those resources, you buy different either different critters that will live in your city or different buildings that will help your city to get more advanced. And inside of that, you use a little bit of engine building because some of the cards give you like different stuff as the seasons go by. And as you play the game, you played it through all the four seasons. So the first season it was starts, and then the second season, third season, and fourth season goes on. And when you finish the fourth season, basically that's the moment that the game is finished. During the game, you can get a little bit of different goals, but mostly the idea is to get the most points. And this is how you win the game. And your critters live on this nice 3D tree that used to like stay on my display for quite a while. Here we love this game. We really love this game. My son, Ilan, who's 4.5 years old, loves this game. I actually bought him his own copy for his last birthday. Yeah, it's a funny story. It started out a friend of mine gave this game to me to try to play it and to see how it works. My son saw it and he was in love. He was in love. He was like 3.5 years old. He was like, wow, I love this game. And we called it the aunt's game, right? Because in Russian, when we say about somebody who's growing up, like auntie, right? So it's auntie's game, basically. And then he came every day, he came to me, Daddy, let's play auntie's game. Daddy, let's play auntie's game. And I'm like, listen, I'm going to buy it to you for your birthday. And then finally, 4 year olds, I bought him the game. It came with shipping. I needed to buy it like a month before because shipments in Israel is pretty bad. And I think that's very nice saying it without cursing them. Yeah, shipping in Israel is awful, is awful. Off the charts. And he was so happy with it. So till today, he's like, he has his own copy. And whenever he said, let's play this game, I'm like, oh no, I need to like start moving those pieces and then putting them in. And he's like, but that's my game. You don't get to decide. I'm like, okay, you're right. Let's play our game.
I like it.
Yeah. So that's Everdell in a nutshell.
Yeah. Ben, what'd you think of the game?
Yeah.
I liked it. It's what's interesting about this is somewhat similar to I was about to say Pendulum.
Tapestry.
Tapestry. Yes. Somewhat similar to Tapestry, you can move through the seasons at different rates. So you choose when you want to refresh and move into the next season. So, for example, Patrick moved into the spring season, probably like 2 turns after I was already in the spring season when he and I played the game. But it does kind of equal out toward the end as you gain, similar to how we said with Tidal Blades, in this one you gain more workers to use as you move through the game, so it gives you more potential actions to use. I thought it was really good, actually. I would play it over Tapestry in terms of games that move at different paces as a mechanic. I don't know if that's a mechanic that actually exists, but games where one player can move a little quicker than the other through the actual phase of the game, I
I
would
can only
rather
think
play
of one
this.
other game that does that.
Which one?
Phase 10, which is not a good game.
Don't think I've played Phase 10.
Yeah, I didn't play it also.
It's a card game, and if you look on the Dice Tower's YouTube channel, it is like very famous how much he hates it.
Yep, I was just about to say, I think that was the one. But no, overall, I thought it was really good. As a worker placement game, it definitely combines like a good bit of worker placement with engine building, like Dima said. At one point, I had like 5 farms in my city, And one of the other cards that I had played was like, when you play this card, you gain a certain number of resources per farm. So I really needed wood to build another building in my city. And because I had all of these farms, I ended up getting like 8 pieces of wood in one shot, which was great. So you can really build on that. And it at two players at least, it was a little tight to get to specific spaces out on the board, which I think is a good thing. I don't think that's something that you, I don't think you want to make it too easy for people to get everything they need in a worker placement game. I think you want a little bit of a like a back and forth tug of war for like specific spaces. But that opens up a little more at higher player counts. Yeah, go ahead, Jonah.
I think that's also how you force interaction in a worker placement game, is by having fewer spots.
Yeah, so for example, when you set the game up, there are spots that are always available no matter what game you're playing. There's like steady spots that are printed on the board. But then you set up other locations that are random via cards. So one of the spaces that Patrick and I had two locations for workers, but only one of them was open until you had a four-player game, and then they both opened. And this spot gave you one of each type of resource except berries. So it gave a pebble, a twig, and a resin, I think is the re are the resource names. And Patrick went there first, which gave him a really nice leg up, I guess you could say, when it came to making buildings earlier, because that's just a really quick boost to your economy that I didn't have at the start of the game. But what's nice is there are buildings that you can make. Like I had a building called the Lookout, and the Lookout allows me to place a worker on my own city spaces and copy any forest worker space of my own, which I thought was a really neat addition. And on top of that, one thing that I liked was that some of the cards that you can place in your own city that have spaces are open to your opponents. So there's a little sign on them that says open. Like Dima said, the art in this game is fantastic and it's really cute. It looks like a little shop and it literally has like an open sign printed on like the left side of the card. And if an opponent comes and uses your space, you get a victory point for them using your space. But it adds another layer of interaction to the game that I thought, especially at two players, was really nice to have. But it also is another way that it might block you from doing an action you want, because those workers don't go back and clear the woods until you move into the next season. So the longer you can extend your turn, which is still something that I need to learn how to do, I'm not great at that. I move through pretty quick. But the longer you can extend your turn, the harder you can make it for your opponent to use spaces on the board to get what they want, which is really cool as well.
Dima, I have a two-part question for you. What is your preferred player count for this game? And do you think at the higher player counts, is it overwhelming how many cards are in front of each person? I guess is my question.
So I don't remember how much cards you need to finish the game. I think it's the same thing. It's like a grid of
I think it's 15.
five. Yeah, it's 15. It's the same
Yeah.
thing. But I would say that I played it in two, in three, and in four as it is. I can say that when I played it with four people, then sometimes somebody moved so quick through the seasons that he just finished the game, and then we were all just playing on as it goes. And it was just sitting there and just sitting and sitting and doing nothing. So from one point of view, the main neg like the main con of the game that I found about it is that everybody advances like through their own times, which kind of makes it possible that somebody will just finish and that's it. And then he will just sit there and just look at everybody playing and having fun. And that's kind of bummer sometimes. So I can say it happened to me mostly at four. At three, it went amazingly good. At two, it was a bit tough with the places. I do agree with that. Yeah, it's like you don't know where exactly to put it, and you play with it. I also play with it solo. And I think that's amazing game in solo. So yeah, I tried it like with a lot of different player counts. I love to try it solo. Well, basically because of COVID, I've been playing a lot of games solo. People wanna meet less. Oh, I kind of get that. I think that the solo version in here with the dummy player that basically goes in and it's like a mastermind that tries to overthrow you and really, really bothers you when play in the gameplay. And I really enjoyed it and I had a lot of fun with it.
And what about expansions? There are expansions for this,
Haven't
right?
There are expansions. I haven't tried them. I haven't tried them. I want to try them. I just need to buy them. But then shipping to Israel, every board game that for you is like $30, for us is 50. Because then you need to pay at least about $20 more for shipping. So then you get to choose instead of like taking two board games for each of them is $30, you need to choose one for 50. And this is why I didn't get to expansions yet, of course, unfortunately. But I hope there's like three different expansions and more like Kickstarter promos and stuff like that. I know there's one that adds a pond and frogs into the game. I didn't went into it. They're like pearls and stuff like that. I didn't went into it. And there's like two more new expansions, Spirecrest and something else, Belmarsh or Belfrost, something like that, which adds more critters to the game, adds more options. I saw reviews about them. They look very, very good. I really want to get them. I just didn't get there yet.
Cool. So I guess, oh, go on, Ben.
Yeah, so I just wanted to add, while I was playing this game, I had two specific negatives about the game. One of which was the same mechanic about moving through the seasons pretty quick. I'm not the biggest fan of games like that necessarily, and while it worked out for Patrick and I, if there were more players, I can see how one person would end a lot sooner. And also just the fact that in the beginning of the game, it felt like I was five or so turns ahead of where Patrick was a little like nerve-wracking to me, because I'm like, oh geez, I'm gonna like finish so quickly and he's gonna have a bunch of turns to just kind of come back and do whatever he wants. It again didn't go that way, but I'm not sure that that mechanic is something I'm great at or I'm in love with at the moment, but I thought it was again better on this than it was on Tapestry. And then the other one for me, which I think would be negated at higher player counts, even if there are more cards to have to keep track of, it felt similar to when we played Wingspan Jonah, where I didn't really do much interacting with my opponent. Now, yes, you're fighting over some spots on the board, but it took a couple of turns to remember that I could actually see what was on Patrick's board and like use things on Patrick's board. And maybe that's something I'll pick up with more plays of the game. But just like an initial, like off the top of my head, negative that I had was it did feel similar to Wingspan, where I was just kind of doing my own thing for most of the game until I really needed that specific spot that he had on his board that happened to be open. But again, I think with more cards on the board, even if you have to pay attention to a little more things, it opens up more options with more players, and I think that that would probably even out the more I played.
The mechanic that we're trying to grasp at, where people can end the game sooner than other players, it's interesting because I think what we don't like is that on a macro scale, but on a micro scale it's fine, because like in Clans of Caledonia and Terra Mystica and a bunch of other games, each round you can keep taking actions until you decide to pass, and that could set you up for a great next round. And there are instances in those games where everyone has passed and someone might take two or three actions in a row by themselves. But then after that, the next round, everyone else kind of comes back in and maybe they could have planned for a stronger follow-up turn for themselves. But on the macro scale where it's across the whole game, where you can just, shoot straight to the end and then be done, maybe that's not what's great.
Yeah, it could be because then, as I said before, you find yourself, you finished, and then like everybody else still playing, you're like, so I'll just go here outside to do whatever I can do right now, and that's it. So yeah, it kind of, but what you said about Wingspan, I do agree with that. That at some point, I think it's the first games when you get too immersed in understanding what this card means and what this card means, you kind of like lost inside of your forest city instead of looking at the other one. And I do agree with that. In Wingspan, you kind of do it all the game. In Wingspan, one of the things that actually, if we talk about Wingspan, that really bothered me in Wingspan until today, it doesn't have almost no interaction with other people during the game. So I said that Wingspan is a very good game to get to know people that you play with. Because while you build your own thing and each and everybody builds their own thing during their turns, you get to speak with the other people about a bunch of different topics. Which kind of makes it cool as it is. It's very beautiful, it's enjoyable. And you get to meet great people, and most people who play board games are actually great, so.
All right. Speaking of people being great, why don't we talk about you and your YouTube channel, Dima?
All right, so I opened my YouTube channel, which is called Meeple Tree Games, about a year ago, almost a year ago. So March is going to be exactly a year. I wanted to open a YouTube channel for, I don't know, for about 2 or 3 years, and everything that I wanted, and then it didn't work out, and then I wanted again, and it didn't work out. I wanted to open it with a friend, and then things kind of got shut down. And then I opened it, yes, with a friend of mine, but she kind of left after the first like 5 videos. So then I found myself again alone and working to promote board games in Israel. That was my main idea at the end, because I was saying that, when you get finally to play a board game, most people, especially in Israel, know about like 3 games, and that's about it. One of them is Monopoly, the other one of them is Risk, and today most of people know Catan. Right, most of people do know Catan. Catan became mainstream in Israel because now you can see different TV shows where people in the TV shows in Hebrew, they play Catan. So Catan became mainstream. People know about Catan. But one of the things that really bothered people is they don't understand the rules. So then I said, "Oh, right, let's do a board game YouTube channel that talks about how you play the rules." And I also wanted to add my review about the games and what do I think about it. And from there to then, I just started building it and bringing in more games. Then different publishers found out about it, and we started collaborating. Back then, until today, like my YouTube channel is not paid. I do get board games from different publishers, but then I say whatever I think about them. And if a publisher is not sure about his game, or he's afraid of a negative review that I will give him, then don't send the game to me, right? This is what I think at the end, because my YouTube channel is basically is free of that. If I get paid to make a video, I just don't review it. I just do an explanation about it, or just show it how you play it, but I don't do the review part in it, because I don't think it's fair that if I get paid, it's bias. It's not what it is. So the main idea is to promote board games in Israel, to build a board game playing community in Israel, and to make people more acquainted with games, with the awesome modern board games that we have in the world, so they can play more with their friends, with their kids, with everybody else. And my YouTube channel just makes for them a shortcut, because they can learn the rules just like that and in Hebrew,
Wonderful.
which is also something that's very big thing, because most of games aren't in Hebrew, they're in English, or in other languages. I travel a lot. Well, I used to travel a lot, and I came to Poland, for example, or to Hungary, in which I work and guide tourists there. And in Hungary, for example, which is a small country, they translated most of the board games that exist. While in Israel, the situation is very different. Most of the board games aren't translated. Most of the board games that are translated, they are board games you don't need language in them. Right? Because it's much easier to translate only the rules, and that's about it. Right? And you have the game ready. But only in the last, I would say, year or two, things have started like spinning more faster, and there's a lot of new board games that coming up. So in the last year, in 2020, we saw Century Spice Road find its way to the Israeli market. And by saying Israeli market, it found its way into every toy store in Israel, which is a big thing, because before that, the only way to find out about those games, it was going online. Either you go on Amazon or eBay or Miniature Market for that matter, right? But this was the way how you found out about games. Today, when you can go inside of a toy store or a bookshop and you can see those games on the shelf, that makes them much more available. So Century Spice Road came to Israel just like a couple of months ago. Camelop came to Israel finally. We
Oh,
have
my
Reef.
favorite.
Yeah, we have Reef translated. Camelop is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so much fun. So much fun.
I just put it on my birthday list. Maybe I'll get it this year. We'll see.
It's very fun game. So we have Reef coming out, a game called Subatomic by Genius Games came up. Smash Up came out in Hebrew about 2 years ago. They're talking about maybe translating more complicated games, but then it's kind of like a, it's an economical suicide basically, because you never know. Like you put a lot of money into translating a game, which in the end probably we don't know yet, but it won't sell much. So it's investing in an unknown future basically in Israel, and that makes a lot of publishers scared about that. I'm really scared about it. I know that there's like a bunch of games coming up. So we have Dominion that they finally translated to Hebrew.
That's a big
We
one.
had an We had Pandemic coming out, came out about a year ago. Splendor came out in Hebrew finally. What kind of games more? Point Salad is on the way to Israel. Okay, Point Salad is on the way to Israel. And there's a bunch more games that I can't talk about right now, which are on the way to Israel and to hit the market in 2021. So 2021 is going to be a big year in Israel for board games. And I really hope it will actually like work out as it is, and people will enjoy more and more to get to know these games and play these games, because they're finally be available as they are in almost every shop in Israel.
Cool. And a lot of the so a lot of the games these days do have the language independence with, more symbols on the game board, like what you're saying, you only have to translate the rule book. But when you're teaching your friends, like back, in the before times, gaming in person, if you had a game that had a lot of English text on the board, did you play board games with people who spoke English and Hebrew, or did you only play with people who spoke Hebrew? And how did you teach the game as well?
So first of all, Israel is kind of unique in that, because in Israel we learn in school English on a very high level. Not everybody knows English, but most of the population do know English. At least most of the secular population. But then again, inside of the religious Jewish population, you have various levels of religious. And while the very like ultra Orthodox probably know less English, most of the modern Orthodox know English pretty well. So you have like a majority of population speaking English. I wouldn't say that for everybody, board games and written board games, you have a lot of text and stuff like that is easy, but it's fairly okay. Like people get used to that, people work with that. So in Israel, we basically have a small board game community, and most of those people that are in those board game community, they play with English board games. same as most of my friends. Okay, when I play with my friend board games, so we play English board games mostly. With my kids, I play Hebrew board games. When I teach, when I used to just do like different activities with board games, I used to run this kind of like after school activities. We used to play mostly in Hebrew because this was easier for teenagers. Families want games in Hebrew, but mostly with, you know, friends and stuff like that who's older, we play mostly in English. Sometimes I do get to translate. So when there's like a game, let's say even Raiders, right? Raiders of the North Sea, you have some English, you have some text. So if somebody doesn't speak English, you can't play this game. And that happens. Sometimes it happens that we need to like choose a different game because people do not speak English and they don't know it. If we play like a cooperative game, so it needs one person to actually know English and everybody else just kind of will work it out because you can tell them what this means or what that means. But when you need to hide your cards and nobody will know what it is, that's problematic. Again, I would say that most of the population speaks English. For most of the population, it will be okay to play board games in English. But I would also say that for most of the population, it would be more comfortable to play board games in Hebrew.
And then for your shelves behind you, your 300 games, are they majority English, majority Hebrew?
English. First of all, most of the good games, you don't have them in English. You don't have them in Hebrew, I'm sorry. Let's say games that are a little bit more complicated, the gateway games or the games that I mentioned earlier, basically you don't have them in Hebrew, right? You have them only in English. Whether it's, for example, Tainted Grail, that's basically a book in English. Or we can even come back to Raiders or Architects, but Architects is fairly easy in that. Again, only the cards say different stuff, but same thing there. Everdell, for example, Everdell is a very tough nut to crack when you play with people that don't understand English. Right? There are some people in the community that actually translate the games into Hebrew. So then you can like sleeve the cards and put like a little paper that has the Hebrew on it. But then it has a lot of work into that. First of all, it's amazing thing that they're doing, making again board games more available to only Hebrew speaking, which is amazing. But then, you know, for some people, it's kind of tough, you know, because you alter the game a little bit, right? You use different stuff, and you kind of you put your white paper instead of the beautiful card. So it kind of differs. But there's a good way of access. Like I know a friend of mine that he actually translated all of Runebound because he wanted to play it with his kids. So he worked a lot, days and nights. We talked about maybe doing something more, let's say more professional with it, but the problem was that, well, you know, money. It had to invest a lot of money into it, and that was problematic. And then at the end, there will be, let's say, everybody that has Runebound in Israel and played Runebound would not buy a Hebrew copy of it. So you'll need to find new crowd. A new crowd is kind of tough for an adventure game, which is, again, in medium complexity, things people don't really know in Israel about. Well, you know, Israel's main adventure game, for example, is Talisman. Right? You just roll the dice and you go, and that's about it. So when you get a little bit higher level, it's still problematic. I think we'll get there. A couple of years and we're there, right? The main reason people don't play much board games in Israel is mostly because they don't know about them. That's the main reason at the end. So as much more of them will come to the shelves, to shelves of every store in Israel, and as much more of them will be either talked about in a podcast in Hebrew or shown in a YouTube channel in Hebrew or even marketed in Hebrew, it will open up the visor so that people will find out more about them and could bring them into their home and try them. just what happened with Catan. It took about 10 years, but finally.
Yeah, I mean, not that board games in America were really like hurting, I guess, but I definitely think that them going into almost every Barnes and Noble bookstore helped. I mean, it gets it in front of an audience that isn't typically out there looking for games. So, like you said, if more shops just start putting games on their shelves in Israel, it could pick up, the industry in Israel and lead to more translated copies of games. So, anything's possible, and that would be a great start. So.
That's definitely true, and I can say that COVID actually helped board games. One of the positive things about COVID, and there's not much, but one of them is that people stayed mostly at home, and the kids stayed mostly at home, and families needed to, well, spend their time somehow. And we had a lot of new people that joined up in the community, finding out more about board games, and people started like ordering board games from abroad and bringing them in. And more games have been trying. 2020 was a good year for board games, right? It
Right.
was a good year for board games. Bad years for travelers, but good year for board games.
Yeah. And good year for online board games as well.
That's true. That's true. I didn't play Board Game Arena or TTS prior to 2020. Yeah. And a lot of applications.
Like what?
Do you have like tons of board game applications that you can play like tons of different games? I know Raiders has an application. I know that Seventh Con Seventh not Continent, Seventh Seven Wonders have an
Wonders.
application. Splendor, Elder Sign even have an application. Potion Explosion, Terraforming Mars, Viticulture, The Settlers, Imperial Settlers, Roll and Ride, and I can go on. There's like a bunch. And every week there's coming in new ones. And I think already they open up Wingspan's application. I'm not sure though. But I think they also have like a root application to play with.
Yep. Star Realms has an app, Jonah.
Oh yeah, I have Star Realms on my phone.
So do I. I also have Raiders.
Man.
I had a gift card to the App Store and I didn't know what to spend it on, and Raiders went on sale and I'm like, "Oh, I like that game. I'm gonna buy it." So I bought the Raiders app. I've played it a couple times. So, yeah. They're out there.
Yeah, I bought the Raiders app before the tournament that I went on Renegade Con because I needed. Well, everybody were at home. Nobody wanted to meet, and I needed to somehow to train a little bit to remember how you play the game. So I downloaded the app and played it a bit. Well, it got me to win one of the games, which is amazing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I go full Valkyrie strategy every time I play.
That's a good strategy.
That is it for this week's episode of Jonah and Ben Play Board Games with Friends. Dima, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you for inviting me. It was a great pleasure to come here to talk about board games. I always love to talk about board games. Also, to kind of invite and give you a peek about Israel's community and Israel's stance on board games.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And if any of our listeners know any Hebrew, head on over to Meeple Tree Games on YouTube. That is it, and we will see you all next week. Have a good one.